In the early 1960s on McDougal Street in New York City's Greenwich Village, there seemed to be a coffee house on every block, and in every coffee house, folk singers. From that impassioned environment emerged one of the enduring anthems of the era, the first breakout success for a recent arrival from Minnesota named Bob Dylan. Blowin' in the Wind is one of the NPR 100, our list of the most significant musical works of the last century. NPR's Brian Naylor has the story.
By 1962, Bob Dylan had been hanging around McDougal Street in Greenwich Village for a little more than a year. He was known as a nervous guy with a funny cap, a singer and writer of songs like dozens, maybe hundreds of others. Happy Traum and Bob Cohen were members of a folk group playing the village at that time called the New World Singers. They would invite Dylan up on the stage to join them.
He was very sort of rough around the edges. And at the same time, he had built this mythology about himself where we didn't know where he came from. He just sort of appeared hitchhiking or riding boxcars out of the Southwest or something like that. And so he was immediately this kind of iconic figure, even for a 19 or 20-year-old kid.
Rough as he was, Dylan had caught the eyes and ears of some important and influential people. John Hammond, already a legendary producer at Columbia Records, heard Dylan and signed him for the label. His first album contained just one original composition, Song to Woody, and sold only a few thousand copies. But Dylan continued to play and to learn. One night at Gertie's Folk City, Dylan heard the New World Singers perform a Civil War-era freedom song, one that Bob Cohen still remembers.
No more auction block for me, no more, no more, no more auction block for me, many thousand gone. And it was very dramatic and a very beautiful song, very expressive. And Dylan heard that and heard other songs he was singing. And some days later, he asked us, he said, "Hey, come downstairs." We used to go down to Gertie's basement, which was, is all right to say, full of rats, I don't know, and other things. And he had his guitar, and he it was kind of a thing where when he had a new song, he'd call us downstairs, and we'd listen to it. And he had started, and he wrote, "How many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man?" And the germ of that melody of No More Auction Block certainly was in that song.
And how many seas must the white dove sail before he sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned?
The answer, my friend, is blown in the wind. Answer is blown in the wind.
The New World Singers were the first to record Blowin' in the Wind. Dylan later said he wrote the song in a cafe across the street from the Gaslight. He claimed it took him 10 minutes. Dylan's manager, Albert Grossman, gave a demo of the song to another act he managed, a trio named Peter, Paul, and Mary.
How many years must a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? How many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?
My friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Blowing in the Wind quickly became an anthem of the civil rights movement, then reaching its peak. Dylan sang it himself at a voter registration rally in Greenwood, Mississippi in the spring of 1963. Peter, Paul, and Mary performed it on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in August of that year, a few hours before Martin Luther King delivered his I Have a Dream speech. And Peter Yarrow remembers singing it during the march from Selma to Montgomery.
When we sang it, it was in a field with probably, I'd say, 5,000 of the poorest people I'd ever seen, all of them black, and They waited in the rain for a couple of hours because the sound system had gone to the wrong destination. We sang it very slowly, in a very determined way, but with a sense of the weariness of the people that surrounded us.
Blowin' in the Wind, with its references to cannonballs and white doves, was also adopted by the anti-war movement. Peter, Paul, and Mary's version of the song became the fastest-selling single in Warner Brothers history. It was topical, it was political, and it was completely unlike anything else on the radio, which at the time was dominated by highly produced pop songs, Stevie Wonder's Fingertips Part 2, Judy's Turn to Cry by Leslie Gore, and The Four Seasons' Candy Girl. Writer David Haydu chronicles the era in his forthcoming book, Positively Fourth Street.
I think it beat out the Chipmunk song, or it was right up there with the Chipmunk song, and to know him is to love him. And can you imagine what it was like to be a teenager and to be flipping through the dials and to hear that kind of silly pop, and then the next thing, the next song, it's blown in the wind. What a revelation that must have been.
In fact, it's the most covered of any Dylan song, with everyone from Duke Ellington to Glen Campbell to Stevie Wonder having recorded it.
How many times must those cannonballs be fired?
Real Marcus has written about Dylan and the 60s. He says Blowin' in the Wind was a product of its era.
You know, there are songs that are more written by their times than by any individual in that time. A song that the times seem to call for. A song that is just going to be a perfect strike rolled right down the middle of the lane. And the lane has already been grooved for the strike. And this was that kind of song. Someone had to write this song.
But what does it mean, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind? Dylan himself was cryptic about it, telling Sing Out magazine in 1962, quote, "There ain't much I can say about this song, except the answer is blowing in the wind. It ain't no book or movie or TV show or discussion group, man. It's in the wind." Writer David Haydu says its ambivalence is part of the song's appeal.
The song can be anything to anybody. It's critical at its heart. It's this litany of questions about what's wrong with the world, okay? So if you're inclined, you know, to damn the establishment and the prevailing authority, there's your song. If you're of a more positive nature, well, the song provides an answer, too, or it hits. It leans toward an answer. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
Peter Yarrow, who with Noel Stuckey and Mary Travers has probably sung the song more often than anyone else, says it's wrong to take the lyrics too literally.
You can hear in this a yearning and a hope and a possibility and a sadness and sometimes a triumphal proclamation of determination. The answer is blowing in the wind, means we will find the answer. So it's a matter of interpretation, and frankly, I think Bobby was probably right and legitimate in not giving a specific interpretation.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
Dylan's own version of the song appeared on his second album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, released in May 1963. What it lacks in polish, it gains in authenticity.
Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died?
Dylan himself has downplayed the significance of Blowin' in the Wind. In the liner notes to his 1985 Biograph collection, he called it just another song, although he admits he knew it was special, but not to what degree. It is still a staple at protest rallies and campfires, and it remains, in Peter Yarrow's words, part of the secular liturgy of our times. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
The answer, my friend, is blowing.